Welcome to the Military Child Education Coalition podcast, the show that highlights a wide range of challenges and triumphs that our military-connected kids experience. My name is Dickie Harrison, and I'll be your host today.
I am so excited to have joining me today a really special guest to really talk about women in athletics, and I would love for her to go ahead and introduce herself.
Well, good morning or good afternoon. I'm Peggy Davis, the Associate Vice President for Athletics and Athletic Director here at Virginia State University, a historically Black college and university located in Petersburg, Virginia. I myself am originally from Texas and relocated to Virginia in 1997 to Virginia State University. I have been in collegiate athletics for over 35 years now, have had very unique experiences, challenges, have absolutely loved providing opportunities to young people. And I truly believe, as I say to them every day, you have to invest in your own career and that you tell on yourself without ever opening your mouth. I certainly live by that. As a leader, I certainly understand that some days you have to be a turtle. That means in order to make progress, you're going to have to stick your neck out. That will not always be favorable, will not always be taken in a positive, but you have to present it as a positive. And so I'm happy to be in this space. I'm happy to be in this environment, and I'm happy to be in this community.
That's absolutely wonderful. And I currently live in Texas, so I'm not from here. So when you said Texas, I was like, yay, a little shout out for Texas here. That was so exciting. But you bring such a wealth of knowledge to athletics, especially at the college level. And so we're in March. It's Women's History Month, and it's also March Madness. I don't know how many of you, everybody's got their brackets going, right? Yes. But it's only fitting that we celebrate really how far women have come in collegiate sports. And so why do you think sports participation is particularly important for women?
Well, first and foremost, I truly believe that sports helps us to become who we are. It's a laboratory of personal development for us. I've always believed this. Sports teaches us soft skills. It helps us to be better citizens. It helps us to set goals for our athletic career and our academic career. Sports helps and teaches us to deal with failure, which we are going to have throughout our life. And so, you know, it helps us with effective time management. You got to get to practice on time. You've got to get to the bus on time. So those things that we're learning in sports today as young people will directly impact the rest of our life. It teaches us to deal with large groups of people and diversity, because that's what this world is made up of. One of the things I truly believe and have always believed is that sports connects people of different ethnicities, religious backgrounds, political aspirations. People come together around sports. And when you look at going back to your alma mater, 20 years down the road, 30 years down the road, you're cheering for the same team with people who you've developed a relationship with back when you were competing. And so everything else is out the window when it comes to sports, and it brings people together. And I think that today, more than ever, with the challenges that are going on in this world, people are coming together around sports. I mean, you look at the Super Bowl, you look at the March Madness, what's going on now, you look at conversations and relationship building, all of that centered around sports. And we as young women and young girls, we start to develop who we are through sports.
Absolutely. And I love that you talked about all the important aspects of what sports can do, the personal development and growth and the soft skills and the, you know, the socialization. I think of my two boys that I have who at a very young age, my husband and I put them into sports. You know, it's like, we don't care what sport you play, we're just going to try them all, you know, because it really helps them so much. And I also really like that you touched upon that it goes across spans of demographics and socioeconomic status, right? The diversity of sports and the backgrounds, and that we're all coming together because we are, interested in this one thing that maybe develops into a love and a opportunity to want to compete competitively, potentially for some of us. So I think that's great that you really touched upon that.
And, you know, another thing I want to say regarding sports, and not just in general for women and girls, but, you know, many of us were given an opportunity and given access to an education because of sports. It will help us to become change agents within our communities. And we have a lot of first generation students who got to an institution of higher learning through their sports participation. And so, you know, and I always say the access and the opportunity to sports, to education, has provided an opportunity and created a pathway for a lifetime of opportunities.
Absolutely. And I think that is great to make as well. That access and that opportunity via the sport is really important, especially in so many communities. Mm-hmm. So I was, you know, doing some research and kind of looking at all the things that are happening within intercollegiate athletics. And I was curious to what some of the more recent trends are that you may be seeing, and especially, you know, men or women, because you've, you know, been in this field for over 35 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the most recognizable trend is the increase in women in sports and girls, their participation. Statistically proven, it's showing that more women and girls are participating in sports now than ever before. When you look at what women's basketball is doing for women's sports, it is absolutely amazing. And it's time. When you can see a women's basketball game getting more ratings on national television than some of the major male sports, wow. You think about how far we have come when we've been fighting to get that television opportunity to get noticed for our participation. And you look at not just that, you look at tennis, you look at what Coco Gauff is now doing, and you look at women's soccer, you know, and so just across the board, young girls and young women are choosing sports. So I think the trend is certainly on the upward for women's sports. I think it's a wonderful thing. You have male athletes who talk about daddy's girl and how they're pushing their young girls to be participants in sports. So I think the trend today, and I think it's absolutely amazing, is the increase and influx of girls and women in sports. And I think it's just going to continue.
When you were talking, I got goosebumps because I feel the same way, you know, as someone who played competitively tennis for many, many years growing up. You are so right. I mean, it is exciting to watch what women are doing in sports right now, whether it's basketball, whether it's soccer, whether it's, I happened to stumble across something the other day on TV, and I was like, women in lacrosse.
Yes.
Women playing lacrosse, yes. Which traditionally was a kind of a male sport, right? And so now you're seeing so many women doing so many amazing things. And I was thinking, with your knowledge and experience, is there one sport, though, that you would like to see more women playing?
You know, it's amazing you mentioned lacrosse, because that's the one that I was thinking. I said, you know what, if we could get more participation. Now, here at Virginia State University, we actually added men and women's lacrosse this year as a new sponsored sport, Division II. So we had a good number of women to come out. We've had, 22 women. But there's more interest, I think, on campus, because you have students to say, oh, man, I didn't know we had a lacrosse program. So I would love to see more of us. It is absolutely a non-traditional sport for our institutions. But just providing the access and providing the opportunity, I think lacrosse will take off. And I would love to see more women participating in the lacrosse. I mean, you look now across the field, you see more sticking their toe in football from a kicking standpoint, right? But I would love to see the increase of women participating in lacrosse.
That's so funny, because that's the one that I was thinking about as well. And you're right. It's also the access and the opportunity. It goes back to what you were saying a little bit earlier. And I was saying with my boys, try it all, right? If there's an opportunity for you to try something out, whether it's through a summer league program, through a rec program in your local community. I love the fact that communities are providing opportunities for young kids to get involved in sports and try things out. I think it's incredible. I have a really good friend. Her daughter plays lacrosse on the high school team and is loving it and never thought that she would be a lacrosse player. So it was just something she tried. And she's good.
Yeah.
So she happened to be good at it. So I really like that. I know you work at Virginia State University, which is an HBCU. And was curious if playing sports at HBCUs is different than playing sports at other institutions. Last month, we did kind of a whole series of podcasts for Black History Month, and we featured some HBCU information and kind of talking about that. So does sports look different at an HBCU?
Well, I think at the end of the day, the goal is the same, and that's to win. You know, nobody goes out to compete to not come up successful. And if winning was not important, they would not keep score at the end of the day. I think there's a difference when it comes to resources, gaining the resources at some of our HBCU institutions versus other institutions. That dynamic certainly looks different in many places. When you have the limited resources, it impacts what you can provide to the student athletes. Now, everybody goes out to ensure that your student athletes have a great quality experience. You know, and I always tell parents and I tell our coaching staff, our student athletes are going to get an experience wherever they go. Quality experience is the key, okay? And so we have to do what we can do at our institutions to ensure that those student athletes have a quality experience. That means travel. That means lodging. That means where we eat prior to and after the games. That means making sure that their uniforms look nice, new, crisp, and clean, that the playing surface is NCAA certified from a quality standpoint, and then engaging our outside community. There are limits. Like I said, resources. When resources are limited, it then limits your staffing, full-time staff versus part-time staff, where some other institutions may be able to have 12 full-time coaches on the football program, where many HBCU institutions, from a resource standpoint, financially are not able to have 12 full-time coaches. I think another significant impact is recognition. People move to what they see. So if we're not providing the national recognition for our institution's sports programs, meaning television deals and television rights, that certainly impacts recruiting. You know, kids want to be on TV. Everybody wants to be on TV. Did you see me on TV today? So I think that's important. And so to be able to get that national recognition from a television sponsorship, from a television deal, that certainly impacts your quality of recruiting. It impacts the resources because of the revenue gained from those rights and different things of that nature. Then it impacts the skill level. So everything works together. You want that top quality athlete at your institution? First thing they want to know is, what are you going to do? Am I going to be on television? Am I going to receive that national recognition? How many strength and conditioning coaches do I have access to? And today, does my program have access to a mental health specialist? Because that's where we are today, you know? So all of that has to do with resources and what resources can be funneled into athletics to be able to provide those resources then to the student athlete to provide a quality experience for those student athletes. When it comes to X's and O's, I think all institutions, whether it's HBCU or whether it's a PWI, set out to hire the most qualified individual. to lead those programs. And the qualified individual understands the skill level and can teach leadership and teamship and goal setting. But at the end of the day, it's more than just, we're here, we're going to step on the court. It's the, are the resources available to build the programs that you want to build, to get the recognition that you want for your program?
Yeah, and it's interesting that you talked about the athletes coming in with some expectations as well, or things that they're looking for, you know, to play at that university or college. They're wanting to know, you know, what is available to me. And so I love that you highlighted that they're thinking maybe not just short term, but long term, because, you know, some of these students are, I'm sure, wanting to have a career after college in this particular sport. And so they're looking at the access that they have. And honestly, I underlined and probably put in bold letters when you said mental health specialist, because right now it's really at the forefront of what we're talking about in so many different arenas. And so it's interesting that they're wanting to know, you know, do you have a staff or have someone that I have access to that if I need to talk to someone or if I need some techniques or tools to help assist me get through what I would think is a very stressful time for an athlete. They're juggling their, you know, competing, playing, they're juggling academics. You know, there's lots of different things that they're having to do that could create probably a higher level of stress. And so it's interesting that they're wanting to know about those things. You know, in 2023, the NCAA had almost 230,000 women student athletes across all divisions. I looked up these numbers. I was kind of interested to see what the breakdown was. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. They also had a little over 270 women in leadership roles, specifically as directors of athletics. So you're someone that holds this very senior leadership position, and I'm curious if you've faced any challenges in that, and then if so, how you've navigated them.
Well, I think the biggest challenge today that we are all faced with is trying to get a handle on and understand name, images, and likeness, which I think is a great thing for our student athletes. Because the time has come for our student athletes to benefit on their own name, images, and likeness. I think it's a great thing. I think what we have to try to figure out is how do we help ensure student athlete success around name, image, and likeness? How do we ensure that the student athlete is being taken care of properly? And when I say taken care of properly, from scammers who make promises yet do not deliver. I think the challenge now a lot of times is kids, not at this level, but what I've read, who may mispractice for a name, image, and likeness session, you know, or for a commercial. So how do we get our hands wrapped around it where it still benefits the student athletes, yet it does not hurt the overall program itself? A lot of times if one person's getting a deal on the team, it can impact the rest of the team. You know, so how do you navigate around it? I think that will be a challenge until we can get some consistency. And I know the NCAA is really working hard to help institutions be able to navigate in this space where it becomes and continues to be a win-win for not only the student athletes and their best interest, but also for the good of the organizations, to ensure that we're still maintaining compliance and producing the product that our fans and constituents want to see. I think that's the biggest challenge right now in athletics. I have no doubt that it will be hammered out, nailed out, where everybody will come out in a great situation. But when you talk about challenges today, I think that is a huge challenge right now. How do you navigate around that space? And then, you know, just being a female in this space, I've been in it long enough to know that preparation is key. If you know that you know that you know, then you're going to be okay, you know. And I also understand in this space that relationships are important, that relationships are key, visibility is credibility. And I don't think a lot of us sometimes understand the importance of being visible. And our core values, everyone around you and associated with you should understand and know what your core values are. They should know what you're about. And I think your core values have to be consistent, because there are going to be times when you're not in the room physically, but you're still in the room. And that has to do with your core values and how you build. So challenges will come, but preparation, of course, like I said, is key. Visibility is credibility, and building relationships. I think it's important that you build the relationship before you need a relationship.
You said so many good things in that. And the first one I want to highlight is the fact that there's this aspect to collegiate sports and the money. It's interesting. You know, I have a college football household, you know, family, and following football during the season, you know, we have these discussions about how much revenue is generated by a specific sports team at a college and things like that. And then the athletes now being able, as you mentioned, having the ability to benefit monetarily as well, right? That's a change that's happening. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to see the dynamics that come into play with that. And then some of the college sports teams that are bringing in millions of dollars that I was like in awe of, like, how much money can be brought in by a particular team. So I could definitely see that being a challenge. And how do you standardize the process and make it to where, you know, the athlete is still receiving that benefit, but it's not impacting negatively the institution or the program or their teammates, you know? So I think that's great that you mentioned that. And then the second part that I think I loved is you talking about facing challenges in general and just preparation being key, and that helping kind of navigate those challenges that you have. And so I think it is important to be prepared to foster those relationships, and definitely things that I will write down. And it's great to see so many more women in coaching positions across the board too, because, you know, that's something you didn't, you know, growing up, I will tell you personally, I never had a female coach. I only had male coaches. So it's really nice to see women coaches now too in sports. I think that's important. So for our military families, you know, sports are important. I know a lot of our military families, that some of the, when we're transitioning and we're highly mobile, one of the first connecting pieces we do if we have kids, whatever their interest is, we try to find it in that new location. For a lot of our families, it's sports, right? I have a son that, you know, played football. BCS, I move. The first thing I'm looking for is how can I find him a football team? Mm-hmm. It's a great way for them to make friends, just kind of really get connected in that new community. And so for our military families that have children that are interested in playing competitive sports, how could they continue to foster that growth and development, especially when you're moving around and you don't have the opportunity to be in one place for a long time?
Well, I think it goes back to, and I keep saying this because relationships are so important. It's building those relationships with individuals already in that space, meaning in that locale, that geographical location, because they're also involved. And so that helps with the connection. One of the great things about technology today, it is absolutely unlimited. You know, so we can research 24/7, 365 days of the year prior to getting where we're going to see what's available. And then, of course, when you look at planning and preparation, getting ready to go to college, the NCAA now has the Eligibility Center where kids across the country can start submitting their information so that for collegiate acceptance, as far as NCAA certification, you know, utilizing the resources that are already in place, the team scouting services can be pricey, but can be beneficial as well. As far as getting footage out there, sending messages, institutions today understand the importance of not just distance learning, but connecting from a technological standpoint and outreach and just sending, you know, sending information. I think once you build a relationship, somebody's always connected to somebody else. The key is going to ensuring that you're staying positive, develop that never give up attitude. Do not get frustrated and decide, well, it's just not working. We're not going to do it, because you have to look at the end goal. And the end goal is to provide participation opportunities for your students. And so I think it's key. I think you have to build those relationships. I think you have to do the research up front. And then you have to continue to provide that positive chatter with your kids and or young people. Sorry, I'm old, so I say kids. With your young people, just to ensure them that you're going to do your very best to help them to be successful. But on the other end of it, they have to ensure that they are representing the values that you have instilled in them as they're growing up. Because you only have one opportunity to make a first impression. And so at the end of the day, you tell on yourself without ever opening your mouth. That's key. As they're walking into the gym, somebody's watching and determining who they are before they ever open their mouth. You know, I think that's key. It can be done. It has been done. You look at students who were military students who have done successful very well in collegiate sports at the Division I, II, and Division III level.
That is so good to hear. I think especially for our families and for parents that have kids that are wanting to play at that level. And that, you know, even though you may have to move in high school, because, you know, it becomes real when you get to high school, right? Mm-hmm. Competitively, it's just playing at a different level. And I think for our families who, you know, maybe they are going to have to move at some point during their child's high school career, that it's not something that's going to negatively impact them. There's still opportunity. There's still ways for them to get there. And I think that's good for them to hear. And especially, I did not know that about the eligibility with the NCAA, that they can start that, like there's a center.
Yeah.
And so we'll make sure that we put that information in our show notes so that we can provide that. But great to hear that there's still opportunity there, because I think that's a fear for some of our families that have kids that play sports. You know, I love that you have talked about so many things in regards to women in sports, in regards to trends, and some of the things that you're seeing and that are changing. And I would love to know if you have any advice for young women that are considering collegiate level sports, and maybe go a step further and talk a little bit about, you know, if they feel like they're not good enough. Because I feel like there's a group of us, you know, I think if, I don't know, if I could go back 25, 30 years, I didn't think I was good enough.
You know, that's funny that you say that, because we as women, and it trickles down to girls, we never think we're good enough. Man, I'm gaining too much weight. I've lost too much weight. My hair is not right. My makeup's not right. So we do our very, very, very best to find ways to say that we're not good enough, when in reality, we're better than we think we are. Typically, we will sit back and wait for someone to come to us than to advocate for ourselves. You know, when I was younger, I heard this story from one of my colleagues when I was young in the business, and he was telling this story about these students in the gym, a PE class, and how the PE teacher went in with this whistle, and he blew this whistle extremely loud, and he said, "Everybody sit down," and everybody sat down. And then he blew the whistle again extremely loud and said, "Everybody stand up," and everybody stood up. And after he did that a few times and kept doing it, well, the young girls were thinking, why is he blowing that whistle so loud? And why is he making us stand up and sit down consistently? Whereas the young men were saying, how do I get my hands on that whistle? We are better than we think we are. You know, we just have to continue to push ourselves. And what I would say is, it's okay to advocate for yourself. We don't do that enough. We do not push ourselves, advocate for ourselves the way our counterparts do. And guess what? It is okay to articulate your goals, what you want to do. We keep it a secret because we don't want people to know just in case I fail. But if we do not articulate our goals, we will not have the help to get us to where we're trying to go. So articulate your goals and advocate for yourself.
Great pieces of advice for sure. And for our young women that are just starting out in, you know, playing sports and wanting to continue on. So, well, this was fantastic. You brought so much knowledge. You've spent so much, you know, time in this field. And so I just want to thank you so much. I have written so many notes that I'm going to use myself. But really great. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You are more than welcome. Thank you for having me. I absolutely enjoyed it. Best of luck to you.
I'd like to thank Peggy for her time today, as I've really enjoyed our conversation. And talking about women in intercollegiate athletics is so important, especially as we celebrate Women's History Month this March. Thanks for listening to the MSEC podcast, the official podcast of the Military Child Education Coalition. If you've enjoyed this episode, please like, share, subscribe, and give today's show a 5-star rating. And don't forget to leave us a comment on topics you'd like to hear more about. We'd also like to say thank you to Consensus Media for audio mixing. I'm Nikki Harrison, and until next time, in a world where you can be anything, be kind.